Welcome back to On the Same Page, an Ithacan podcast where we dive into the top stories in news, sports, and life and culture here at the Ithacan. I'm your host, Emma Kirsting. This week, we spoke to Assistant News Editor Ryan Johnson about the Ithaca Pride Alliance, sports reporter Julia Wallace about a recent track and field and cross-country alumni event in Boston, and senior reporter Matt Minton about AI use in academic settings. I'm here now with one of our assistant news editors, Ryan Johnson, who wrote a story about the Ithaca Pride Alliance. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us here today on the Same Page. Please introduce yourself a little bit.
Hello, my name is Ryan Johnson. I'm the assistant news editor. I've been doing the Ithacan since I was a freshman, so for almost 2 years now. And I was just recently promoted to assistant news editor this semester. And this is my first news front as the assistant news editor. So I'm very excited.
Wonderful. Thank you again for joining us. Could you just start off by explaining a little bit what this article was about?
Yeah, of course. So the Ithaca Pride Alliance is a pride organization in Ithaca, New York that was announced November 15th. And last weekend, Saturday, February 3rd, they had their first opening event called the All Y'all Clothing Swap. So this article was about what the Ithaca Pride Alliance is, future plans for programming, and covering their first event.
It sounds like you had a lot to go over in this piece. So could you start off by elaborating on who you spoke to get this information? Who were your sources?
Of course. So the Ithaca Pride Alliance board consists of 7 members of the Ithaca and wider surrounding areas community. The chair of the IPA's name is Andrew Sheldorf. They have experience in drag programming and other LGBTQ plus programming experience in Ithaca. And I also interviewed Chrissy D'Alfonso, who is the director of the LGBT Center for Outreach and Services at Ithaca College. They were the founding members along with one other person. So I interviewed them to get background on the Ithaca Pride Alliance. And what I learned from them is that the Ithaca Pride Alliance was created to sort of centralize all of the individual LGBTQ plus resources in Ithaca, because we didn't really have a centralized organization in Ithaca. And with a centralized organization, it makes it easier to plan events. There's actual funding. The IPA is partnered with the Tompkins Chamber Foundation that provides funding and business service for nonprofits in Ithaca. And that's how they're really getting their funding right now, and also through sponsors. But yeah, so the Ithaca Pride Alliance serves as an organization that spreads LGBTQ plus resources in Ithaca and plans events. And in June, they are doing Ithaca Pride Week 2024, which is their big sort of event for this year.
So were you able to attend the All Y'all Clothing Swap? And if so, what was that experience like going to like the premier event of this organization?
So I was able to attend the All Y'all Clothing Swap. It was actually pretty integral for my article because I got most of my interviews from community members and college students there. And it was a really, really, really fun event. In order to plan the event, the board sort of partnered with local organizations to serve as donation centers for clothing that they could use at the swap. It happened at the Community School of Music and Arts, which is right by the Commons in downtown. And Ithaca College was used as a donation center. And Ithaca College provided clothing racks and supplies for the event so they could really focus on advertising the event. And so really every cornerstone of the community sort of came together to put this event on, which I think is really great. There were about 140 people who attended. And while I was there, I could see, you know, how excited mostly young people were because it was free clothes. And our generation loves to thrift. But there were just really happy faces there. People from organizations like Planned Parenthood and the Advocacy Center came to table and spread information about LGBTQ plus resources. And it was just a really, really nice space. And people were able to bring clothes to be donated until 3 p.m. So there was just a lot of good clothes that people could pick through. And it was just a really great event all around.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. So the Ithaca Pride Alliance is not like directly affiliated with Ithaca College. There's not Ithaca College students that are directly involved with the organization. So why did the Ithacan decide to pick up this story and report on it?
Yeah, and so the big piece of the Ithaca Pride Alliance is that it's actually not directly affiliated toward any college or university in the area, because there was a real lack of LGBTQ plus organizations and resources that directly served the Ithaca and Tompkins County community. Ithaca College prides itself on having amazing LGBTQ plus resources and trans inclusive resources and housing. All across campus, we have a really great LGBTQ center here. And so students do feel provided for. And that's the same at Cornell University as well. But, you know, the sort of resource desert was kind of in the Ithaca community. So the reasoning that the Ithacan decided to cover this is because it does impact, you know, the community we're in. And it kind of does serve a significance to say that there are great resources on the college campuses, but what about the people that don't go to those college campuses or the older people in the LGBTQ plus community? So this kind of serves as just a centralizing organization so that everybody in the community is covered for in Ithaca.
Were there any challenges that came up in your reporting for this article?
It was a sort of a tough deadline to reach, because on Saturday was the event and Wednesday, you know, our paper is going to be out. And so that was the deadline. So it was a quick turnaround in writing. But challenging, no. And I really did enjoy putting this together because I got to talk to all sorts of interesting people in the Ithaca community. And that's really what stuck out to me about, you know, the Ithaca Pride Alliance and how it's bringing all facets of the Ithaca community together.
Yeah, I love reporting stories that are about the Ithaca community. I feel like there's such like a rich culture of people downtown that just talking to them about anything, they'll have really specific like anecdotes about how they've interacted with parts of a community over several years, which I feel like you can't really get the same kind of vibe from a college student, because usually they're just here for 4 years and maybe they stay a few years after graduation. But there are so many people in town that have been interacting with this community for decades, and so it's always so much fun to talk to like people who have grown up in the area and have lived here like long term.
So going off what you said about people living here for a long time and how interesting it is to talk to them, what I found was it was really interesting talking to people in the LGBTQ plus community that just moved here. So two people that I talked to at the event actually just moved here within the month. One person moved from Woodstock and the other from Ohio. So it was really interesting seeing what they thought about the LGBTQ plus community. And both of them were like, it's very vibrant, it's very loud, and especially for a small town, which I thought was one of the most interesting, you know, sort of discoveries during this process, was that people are sort of coming to Ithaca because, you know, the LGBTQ plus community is so, you know, loud and large.
That's really cool to hear. That's, I feel like, a good transition to my next question, which is, you know, you said you talked to a lot of people at the event. So was there anything you learned while talking to the attendees that you found really interesting, but maybe it didn't necessarily fit in like the angle of the article?
Yeah, so I got to talk to Kimberly Brown, who is a member at large of the board of the IPA, and she was doing some tabling just to get the information out about the Ithaca Pride Alliance and sort of promote the volunteer form. But she was in Ithaca in sort of the 1980s, I believe, and she was talking about, you know, sort of the gay bars that we had around that time. And while it didn't sort of, you know, fit in the word count of the article, or I couldn't find a way, that was honestly really enriching for me personally, because I love to learn about, you know, the queer history of Ithaca, because for such a small town, we do really have a great history. I mean, Cornell University in 1969, the second public gay student organization in the country was at Cornell University, called the Student Homophile League. Obviously, we've evolved past that language and we've become more inclusive as a community. But LGBTQ programming has really been in the works for, you know, over 60 plus years here. And it's just continuing to get better and better.
I love reporting on a story, like, that there's so much context around it. And, like, even if the story you're writing doesn't need to include all that context, it's so important to just be able to, like, learn about it. I feel like it really makes, like, the writing of a story so much, I want to say, like, it just comes so much easier to you once you, like, really have a good understanding of what else is going on around it. And it makes me more appreciative of, like, the story that I'm writing.
So going back to your question about some of the difficulties of reporting, honestly, it was a little difficult, the scope of this story, because I did have to get, you know, all the background of the Ithaca Pride Alliance, sort of all the background about LGBTQ plus history, you know, nonprofit background, and event coverage all into sort of one story that, you know, has to be under 1,200 words. So that was a big challenge. But I think it all came together pretty great. And I got the background from the board members and then community reactions. And so it was just really great reporting on what an organization was and what an organization does.
Yeah, thank you. So I think that's all the questions that I had for you today. Thank you so much again for joining us. Is there anything else about the story that you want to mention before we go?
Yeah, so if anybody in the Ithaca area wants to get involved in the Ithaca Pride Alliance, there is a volunteer sign-up form on their website. And the big event that they're going to have this year is Pride Week 2024 in June. And there's going to be a lot of programming opportunities, a lot of volunteer opportunities. And you can also donate to the Ithaca Pride Alliance. And there's many ways to get involved as a community member. So I just wanted to highlight that part.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much again for joining us. To our listeners, be sure to check out the Ithaca Pride Alliance. And you can also read Ryan's full story at theithacan.org or in this week's print edition. All right. So we are here now with Julia Wallace, a reporter for the sports section of the Ithacan. And this past week, she wrote an article about an alumni event with the cross country team. Julia, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. My name is Julia Wallace. I'm a senior here and I'm a writing major. I kind of had an unorthodox join in to the Ithacan, but I'm really glad to be a part of it now. Billy came to me with this story 2 weeks ago, and I was super excited since I've been able to work with the cross country and track and field teams before. This one was actually kind of interesting because they had the opportunity to talk with some of the alumni outside of just the usual students and coaches, which was pretty interesting. And it just goes to show the values that Ithaca College has in terms of keeping alumni and students connected is really, really strong.
Great. Thank you. To start off, you said you've been drawn to these cross-country stories. Is there any specific reason you have this connection to cross-country, or you just like running?
So yeah, I ran varsity cross-country, indoor track, and outdoor track from eighth grade all the way through my senior year of high school. And then I went to the University of Tampa for my first three semesters, which was a D2 school, so a little too quick for me. And then by the time I was transferring here to a D3 school, I hadn't run in so long. So I still have a very strong connection and love for the sport, but I knew that I wouldn't be in a position where I was comfortable going back out and competing again. So getting involved, writing for the team and promoting them was the next best thing.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I think a lot of like the people in the Park School that are involved with sports media is usually because they played sports when they were kids or in high school. And, you know, they still have that passion for athletics. They want to stay connected with the sport, even if they're not the ones that are playing it. So I think that's always such a fun way to be able to share what's going on in the athletic world without necessarily being an athlete in it, which I think is a lot of fun. I've also written for the sports section. I agree. I think it's fun. And so could you elaborate more on what this event was between the current track and field team, the cross country team, and the alumni?
Absolutely. So every cross-country and indoor track season, there are two little alumni events that are more race-based, where the alumni are invited back to just have some relaxing, fun opportunity to like compete again, especially after being away from the track for so long. So those events are more fun, kind of relaxed, kind of a familiar family vibe between the current athletes and the alumni. This new event they just started doing last year, there is a invitational meet that only specific athletes get chosen to run for down in Boston. They compete at a indoor track facility that was just built. It's the New Balance Arena. And believe it or not, one of our alumni actually is on the board of the directors for the construction of this new facility. And now that it's finished and there's runners actually competing there, Coach Potter got in touch with this alumni, Christine. And they actually have the opportunity to get tours of the track. They get to eat at the little restaurant that's adjoined to the track. I think it's called Breaking Records or something like that. And all of the alumni that are in the Boston area are invited to go have dinner, go check out the facility, and get this kind of exclusive behind-the-scenes tour that no one else would usually get. And once again, just an opportunity for those alumni down in Boston to kind of root for the current athletes that'll be competing at that meet.
That sounds really cool. And you've mentioned a few different people involved in this event, in organizing it, Coach Potter and a few alumni. Could you elaborate more on who you spoke to get this information, who were your sources in this story?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I did was I reached out to two of our student athletes on the men and women's track teams, senior Chris Lasada and then sophomore Jessica Good. And I kind of just picked their brains over which alumni they're in close touch with. I got their opinion kind of on the current events. Neither of them had had the opportunity to check out the Boston facility yet. So we'll have to see later into the season who gets to qualify to go. But after that, I touched base with Coach Potter, who spoke on behalf of herself, and Coach Nicholas. And yeah, she gave me a lot of good names, a lot of great connections. And she is the one that gave me Christine's name. She connected me with Roosevelt Lee, who's actually an assistant coach for the men's team who graduated in 2018. And then Billy actually connected me with Sherry Golden, who works at the school and competed for the team and is married to Ian Golden, who helped coach the men's cross country team for a good while before he started coaching down at the Ithaca High School. So yeah, a lot of alumni I got to speak to, which was really interesting and exciting.
Great. That sounds wonderful. And were there any challenges that came up in your reporting?
Yes, absolutely. I think with all of the stories that I've written so far, getting in contact with people is always the most challenging aspect. Everybody's got very busy lives, so I completely understand. But it was just a lot of trial and error. I did reach out to a very, very big handful of alumni, and a very, very small handful responded. But when I did get to connect, especially with the alumni, it was really, really interesting because the people who did respond clearly were just so excited to talk about their time with Ithaca Track and Field and the future of the events that are to come.
Excellent. I feel like when I'm doing reporting, there's always something that I like. A source just like mentions offhand, and I'm like, wait, that's like the most interesting thing you've said so far, and it's not even related to this story, so who am I going to tell? So was there anything interesting that you learned while you were reporting on this story that just seemed really interesting to you, that, you know, whether it was able to make it into the article or not?
Absolutely. So there's two major things. One thing was more personal, and that was learning about the new New Balance Arena being built down in Boston. I had competed at the New Balance Arena up in Manhattan at the Armory during my high school career. So knowing that these bigger, more impressive facilities are being built all around our country was just really, really exciting to me. Also, something that did get put into the article was the track teams will be races, which I think are super adorable. The coaches make these shirts that says will be racers, and they put them on the children of the alumni. So they look at these little kids as the like future track stars for Ithaca College, like our next wave of athletes. So I just thought that that was a pretty cute little thing to incorporate in an alumni event.
So this is more about you specifically than about the story, but you mentioned that you are a writing major. And so Of course, you do not have to be a journalism major or even a Park student to be involved at the Ithacan, but I was just curious what drew you to writing for the Ithacan specifically for the sports section, or have you written for other sections at the Ithacan?
So this was actually pretty funny. I actually transferred here last spring, and when I got into the writing department, I was under the impression that it would be less creative and more reporting kind of stuff. But now that I'm in the major, I only have one semester left here. I'm going to just finish it out doing the more creative stuff while, you know, following this passion of reporting with the Ithacan. So when I first got on board with the Ithacan, I was actually in the life and culture section. And I did write a book review my first semester here, so last spring semester. And that was like my first little publication. And when I saw my name in print and everything on the website, I just got obsessed and I wanted to do as much more as I could. And, you know, I work on the weekends, so I wasn't able to like make the in-person meetings. So I started just sending emails on Slack, just like, hey, can I pick up stuff here? Can I pick up stuff there? And it turned out that the sports section was in need of someone to start covering cross country and track and field. And that's how I got connected there. And then once I started working that angle, I just haven't stopped. It's just been really, really fun.
Great. That sounds like a great experience that you've had with the paper so far. We're so happy to have you with us, of course. And I think that's all the questions I have about this story and about you. Before we go, is there anything else on your mind about this story that you want to share?
I just have had a really, really great time writing this story and anything relating to the track and field teams here at Ithaca College. And I'm really excited to see what else I can produce. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you so much again for joining us. And to our listeners, you can check out this article at theithacan.org and in this week's print edition. I'm here with Matt Minton, and they're here to talk with me about the top life and culture story this week, about AI use in classrooms and how that's impacting both faculty and staff and the students. Matt, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself.
Awesome. I'm super excited to be here. This is my first time on the show. I am a senior writer here at the Ithacan. I've written since my freshman year for Life and Culture. I was Life and Culture editor for a year, so super excited to be still writing.
Great. We're happy to have you. Just to start off, could you tell our listeners just a little bit what this article is about?
Absolutely. So AI is something that is obviously on everybody's mind ever since the launch of ChatGPT in November 2022. One thing I've noticed is a lot more professors, especially this semester, being very open about their AI policies, being open if they allow it, if they don't allow it, and a lot of times kind of in that gray area in between where they allow it for some things, but other things they are still saying no to. So it was interesting to look at how professors' policies have changed over the past year and a half. I got to interview a few professors from different departments and a few students overall just to talk about their policies, where they kind of draw the line with AI, like, and also just how they've been dealing with this piece of emerging technology that we're still learning about, that Ithaca College, like many schools, doesn't have an official policy on AI and how it's being used. So it's kind of up to the professor's discretion. And so it's been interesting to see, to hear about all the different perspectives and how people are implementing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into my first question for you, I'm curious, because this issue impacts a lot of people on campus, I'm curious who your sources were for the story. Who'd you speak to?
Yeah, so my first course of action was to go on Instagram, make a story post just to get some student perspectives, because I knew that I had already some professors in mind who I would speak to, but mainly the there were so many, you know, obviously so many students, so it was hard to kind of find who to speak to. So I reached out on Instagram and I ended up speaking with Jamie K. Smith, who's a sophomore, and then Isabel Lampert, who's a senior. And they both ended up talking about how they are using AI in class, mainly to help them with research, and also talking about where they draw the line with AI, like where they think AI is considered cheating or where it's going too far. And then some of the professors I spoke with, I work at the Writing Center, and our Writing Center director, Priya, I got contact information from her for Jenna Lenskins, and she works with instructional design and educational technology at Ithaca College, and she's been kind of paving the way for how this technology is being used with testing. She had open conversations since January 2023 with the community, kind of getting to hear about people's concerns. It was interesting to speak with her specifically because she was able to talk to how the college is trying to implement this learning course on Canvas so that students can kind of get more experience with AI literacy, and then also a faculty resource course that will sort of help professors keep AI in mind and in when creating assignments for students and sort of implementing that. Because I think one of the interesting things is also how, at least from my personal experience, like when ChatGPT first kind of launched, everybody was like very much like pushing it away, like not wanting to touch and not wanting to even talk about it. And so it's been interesting to see how the conversation has become much more open and people have become more open to the ways that AI can be helpful and can be used. So I think it was definitely important to me to get sources, a diverse range of sources that had different stances on AI and were willing to talk about how their opinion has changed over time.
Great. That sounds like you got a lot of really helpful information on that. Yeah, I've definitely noticed a lot of updates to professors' syllabi this semester, including like AI policy. So it's interesting to see. I hope other students have also noticed that and maybe are contemplating how that affects them. So I'm interested to know if you were able to speak to any administration on what their plan is for updating the academic policy campus-wide in relation to AI softwares that are available.
Definitely. So I didn't get to speak to any specific admin, but I did get to speak to Professor Luke Keller in the Physics and Astronomy Department, who is on the IC Academic Policies Committee. And I did get to speak to him about how the student handbook, their current policy on plagiarism, does not currently include AI. It was interesting to speak to him and get to hear about how they're trying to keep up to date with this emerging technology and consider how faculty and students may be using it. So they're currently discussing ways that they can update the student handbook to be mindful of how people might be using AI. But they definitely do want that to be an open conversation with faculty and students. So it's very much something in debate. There's not a specific timeline for when the school will have a more official policy, but it's definitely something in the works at the moment.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And I feel like this is a very large, I don't want to say AI is an issue, because I feel like there's a lot of good uses for it, and it really just depends on what your intentions are when you're using AI. Like, when it's being used for research, I think it can be helpful, but when it's used to in replacement of like original work, I think it can be harmful. So for this article, it seems like there was a lot of context surrounding the potential for like an AI policy, specifically from an academic standpoint. So I'm curious, was there anything you learned in your interviews or in just research for this article that you found interesting?
Yeah, I think when I was approaching this article, I was more thinking about like, I think a lot of the conversations we're having right now is about how students are using it. Are students cheating? Are students plagiarizing their work? But I got to interview Professor Diane Gajewski, and one of the things she mentioned was how the tables can be turned back on the professors and to see how professors might be using it, whether it's grading assignments, creating syllabuses, like things like that, that it's very much a two-sided issue. And I think it kind of broadened my understanding of how this is something we're all in this together. It's not just about the students, it's also about how faculty might be using it and just the importance of both sides of the classroom equation being honest about how they're using it. So I think that was definitely one of the most profound things I learned, or not learned per se, but just like a new understanding of the issue and how many people it might be affecting, just because I don't think the conversation has been as much surrounded by how faculty might be using it. Another thing, one of the students I interviewed, Jamie K. Smith, she took a Power of Injustice class, and her professor had them basically write an essay about a topic and then have an AI generate an essay on that same topic and sort of compare the two and really get into the nitty-gritty of the differences. Like, what does the AI generate that was different or inconsistent with the prompt? So it was interesting to look at how AI, different professors might be using AI to try and get students to understand just AI better and interrogate kind of what the AI is doing with the prompt, with the AI, how the AI is generating ideas, to sort of see the differences between the two. So I think that's another one of the important things, is just a lot of professors talking about how important it is for students to understand AI and to be familiar with it going into the workforce, because it's in a lot of jobs, especially more like strategic communication. Professor Diane Geske mentioned that it's going to be something that students have to use at some point in their job, in their career, so that it is really important to have those conversations and to have students interact with AI so they can better understand it and better understand the ways that they can use it and the ways that they maybe shouldn't.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And on your point of how some students in their future in a career might need to use AI. But yeah, that's a really interesting point about how AI is evolving and is being used like in the workforce in specific ways. Changing directions a little bit, were there any challenges that came up in your reporting for this piece?
There's not a professor I was able to speak to that was outright banning AI in no capacity, at least based off of who I was able to reach out to and get responses from. And I was hoping to get just another perspective of somebody who just is still completely banning it. I think that's especially an important conversation with more like creative fields like screenwriting, theater. I think that's something that one of the student sources, Jamie K. Smith, as I mentioned, is a theater studies major. So that was another conversation we had about how, you know, we can use AI to aid us and to maybe help with research, but it's never going to be able to replicate our personal touches in our work. And so sort of drawing that line. So yeah, I think I would have liked to have gotten a perspective of somebody who is still banning it, but I think that does also speak to just how many professors are being more lenient to it, just because so many people I spoke to were, even if they weren't fully allowing it or even just for a few things, they were being more open to it. So I think that does speak to the changing nature of our perception of AI and people just being more open to its different capabilities.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all the questions I had for today. Thank you so much for joining me. Just to wrap up, is there anything else on your mind about this article that you want to share?
Well, thank you so much for your time. This was really awesome to get to speak on this podcast for the first time. I would say, yeah, just definitely look out for, you know, any possible changes to the student like handbook and the plagiarism policy. But I would just encourage students and faculty to continue to be open with each other about AI. I'm working at the Writing Center and we had a staff meeting today. We actually were trying to implement, because we have students that come in all the time about with essays that have, where professors are requiring ChatGPT and some of us have never used ChatGPT. So I would just encourage people to keep an open mind and just be in conversation, you know, question what they're seeing in the AI and not just taking things at face value.
To our listeners, you can check out Matt's article at theithican.org, or you can read it in this week's print edition of the paper. Thanks for listening to On the Same Page, and thank you so much again to the reporters who spoke to us this week. You can find more episodes of On the Same Page and our other shows anywhere you find podcasts when you search The Ithacan. You can also find this content and all the articles we spoke about this week at theithacan.org. Thanks for listening.